On March 23rd, 1965, something amazing happened at the Bell Sound Studios here in New York City. The lovely voice of singer Jackie DeShannon filled the studio with Hal David's lyrics to the song that he and Burt Bacharach composed, What the World Needs Now is Love. We could easily adapt this same theme to our world today and perhaps paraphrase it with, What the world needs now is compassion. Perhaps this is something that many of us recognize not only intellectually, but viscerally connect with in our body and spirit. If you are feeling this, you are a sensitive soul, and many of us, in extending our sensitivity and compassion, often feel rejected and out of place in a world that so desperately needs the gifts of spirit we bring. My guest this week on Vox Novus, Teresa Chung, says that there are more of us out there than we may realize, and lovingly offers us tools and advice for sensitive souls to thrive and fulfill our purpose. Teresa Chung has been researching and writing about spirituality, dreams, and the paranormal for the past 25 years. She has a master's degree from King's College, Cambridge University in theology and English, and several international best-selling books, including two Sunday Times top 10 bestsellers to her credit. Her dream dictionary A to Z regularly bounces to number one in its Amazon category and is regarded a classic in the field. Her spiritual books have been translated into more than 40 languages, and she's written numerous features for national newspapers and magazines. Teresa's media appearances include an interview with Today Extra, Piers Morgan on GMTV, guesting on episode 71 of Russell Brand's Under the Skin podcast, and Decoding Dreams Live on Coast to Coast AM. She's also given numerous sold-out talks at venues such as Olympia, Alexandra Palace, and the College of Psychic Studies. She works closely with scientists studying consciousness and has her own popular spiritual podcast, White Shores, as well as a busy author page on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Her website is teresachung.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her latest book, The Sensitive Soul, Life Strategies for Thriving in an Overwhelming World. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Teresa Chung. Welcome, Teresa.
Oh, welcome from the UK. Thank you so much for having me. It's very kind of you.
And thank you for joining us. Please tell us about your path and how it led to your work with all things spiritual.
Oh, where to begin? Have you got hours? I'll try to cut a long story short. I was born into a family of psychics and spiritualists, so it was just accepted as normal that there is a spiritual dimension to our lives and that you can connect to the afterlife, you can have intuitions and dreams, and, you know, astrology is important. So it was kind of how I grew up. But then, of course, when I went to university at Cambridge, and I began to realize that not everybody thinks that way. In fact, it's considered quite strange, especially in the UK, which tends to be cynical. And then I began a journey to try and understand the culture I'd been raised in, because I was born into a family of psychics and spiritualists, but I never felt I had the gift myself. I don't see dead people. I don't see angels. And as you would, you know, like in the way the movies represent them. So I wanted to understand, you know, I've been born in this family, but I don't feel that I'm psychic or spiritual. And then I really went on a long journey through my books, really collating stories of people who believe they have paranormal gifts, sharing them to a wider audience, researching this phenomenon with scientists to actually understand, right, you know, only recently, really, that I have got spiritual and psychic gifts, which everybody has, but they just reveal themselves in subtle, unexpected ways. And I think that's the great majority of us. And that's what I'm on a mission now to do, to show that we're all mediums, we're all psychics, we're all healers, we just don't quite realize it. And of course, my latest book, we're all deeply sensitive, but, you know, for a variety of reasons, that is masked in some of us. And it's getting back to our true spiritual home, which is my passion now.
Absolutely. I know when I first admitted as a child and later on in my teens, having certain gifts and abilities, was referred to in those days and even up into the last 10 years as woo-woo by some people.
Woo-woo. I hate that term.
Isn't that horrible?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm fed up with it because I'm sure you've had media as well. And whenever the media interview me, they, you know, in, you know, pre-pandemic times when they would come to my house, they would expect me to have a crystal ball or something like that, you know, a paraphernalia or a Ouija board or something. And it was so frustrating to show that that is not spirituality, to try and reprogram how people think of it. But it's interesting, you had paranormal gifts. I didn't feel I had any. And it was a course of great frustration for me through my life because I'd go to psychic development classes and nothing. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who feel drawn to this spiritual growth, whatever, but don't feel they have gifts. So I'm writing for those people. I'm championing them.
Absolutely. And one of the recurring themes that seems to occur when I speak with others who have had this type of experience is that it does run in families. It did run in my family. And as you'd mentioned, it runs in your family also.
Oh, yes, absolutely. From a long line of it. It's skipped a generation with me. However, I now realize that it hasn't because I'm expressing it in a different way. And I think that's the journey of our lives to find our own path to heaven, the afterlife, to spirit. And I have just taken a different path and it was the perfect path for me. And perhaps because of my frustrations, not feeling that, you know, there was a switch I could flip on and I'd be psychic, that maybe I've been able to reach more people that way. Than if, you know, and using my academic background as well, you know, the research I bring into it, being able to reach out to scientists, maybe I've been able to spread the word in a way that I never could, perhaps, if it had come easy to me.
Absolutely. One of your recurring themes is that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. What are the lessons that you think we're here to learn in human form?
Oh, I think... Oh, gosh, that's such a huge question. I think I'm trying to condense it. Obviously, there are a million, there are an infinite variety of infinite potential that we've got to learn. But I think it boils down to curiosity. I think always asking questions. I think that's our number one lesson, because I think once we say something is known or we know, that's when we shut down dialogue with other people. So I think curiosity and, of course, compassion, empathy, connection. Those, I think, are the fundamentals. And there are lots of offshoots of that and subcategories. But those, for me, are the foundation stone. Beginning, I think spiritual awakening begins when you start getting curious and thinking, is this all there is to me, to life? What's the meaning and what's the purpose? And I think that at the end of the day, we all like to feel we've got a meaning and a purpose, and a life without spirituality, sadly, it can be very exciting and pleasurable and fun, but it won't give you that sense of deep meaning and purpose, which I think we all need, especially now with the world gripped with the pandemic.
I know for me personally, one of the lessons that I was here to learn in this form was self-worth and self-love.
I should have mentioned that too. There's so many things. Of course, another foundation is self-love. And I think, you know, we're told in every spiritual movement or philosophy to love ourselves, but nobody really tells us how. And for some reason, for a great majority of people, that is the hardest journey. Actually, loving yourself. I mean, we spiritual people tend to be very good at pouring their love into other people, into other things, into causes, and they do remarkable healing work that way. But it won't help them evolve until that love is also turned back in on themselves and they learn to love themselves in the same way that they do their causes and other people.
Absolutely. I used to say to folks that my problem is I'm Sun in Capricorn, Moon in Aquarius, and Cancer rising, which makes me a hot mess.
Oh, it's brilliant combination. How exciting. Explains what you're doing. And, you know, I'm in awe of what you do and the healing message you do. That, you know, I am interested in astrology, but I wouldn't say I'm a great expert, but that combination sounds, you know, there was no other path for you, I think.
Absolutely. I was looking at your Amazon page, and you are a prolific author. How many books have you written?
Yeah, I always joke and say I'm a serial writer. You know, it's just it's an addiction. I think you know it's been. I've lost count. If there's a new age topic, I have written about it, and it's all my hunger for learning. And maybe it was because I was trying to compensate because I didn't feel like I had visions or extraordinary gifts. So I thought I'm going to learn all I can. And I was very lucky early in my life. I started out writing some heavyweight encyclopedias for HarperCollins of the psychic world, which was an A to Z of everything psychic. So I think that's what enabled me to use that as a launch pad to write about astrology, to write about psychic development, to write about dreams, to write about crystals, to write about the moon, you know, literally everything. But I guess where I'm most well known now is my dream interpretation work and also angels. I write a lot about angels.
And listeners, if you go to her Amazon page, you will be blown away by the number of books that are there.
It's probably stronger in the Amazon because I am based in the UK, so that's where my publishers are based. But I think a lot of them do translate, certainly over to Kindle on Amazon.com. But yeah, if you go to especially my Amazon.co.uk page, it's ridiculous. And because of all the translations now,
absolutely.
Now I'm very blessed. I feel very fortunate that I've had the opportunities to do all this.
What would you say your mission is in all the wonderful work that you do?
My mission is for people to see that this life is not all there is. There is more to us than stuff and the material. And if I can just open people's mind to the possibility that there is an invisible, unseen aspect to our lives, both within and around us, I'm happy.
Absolutely. Now, several of your books, as you have mentioned, deal with dreams, including Dreams A to Z. What sparked your interest in dreams, and what advice would you offer listeners about decoding their own dreams?
Well, there's a personal reason, because I very much feel that dreams saved my life. Certainly when I lost my mother 20 or so years ago, it was a series of powerful dreams that helped me in a way that grief therapy could not. And I've since gone on to find out actually that working with scientists and dream and sleep researchers, that dreaming of departed loved ones is a very healing in about 88% of cases. It really helps the grief process. And that's especially the case now in the pandemic when a lot of people aren't able to say goodbye to loved ones, that having a dream of them, meeting them in your dreams can be extremely cathartic and healing. So it was for me. And I also believe I had a dream of my mother where she told me to take the right path. And this led to me to a decision later that day to not take the left path at a junction when I was supposed to. And I took the right path for no reason because I was going in the opposite. I should have gone left, but I went right because I recalled that dream. And I truly believe that that may well have saved my life. It may not. It might have been a coincidence, but what is coincidence? But what it did, it was dreams that I feel spirit first broke through to me. And empowered me, because every dream I had of my mother was so empowering and so comforting. It was almost like she was still alive. I realized something powerful was going on here, and I wanted to understand it. And I wanted to talk to sleep and dream researchers. I wanted to talk to people who had transformative healing dreams. So I went on a journey, and I wrote that book actually originally was published as the Element Encyclopedia of 20,000 Dreams. But then the publisher said, look, it has to be a paperback because the hardback's so unwieldy. I mean, it was literally huge. It was about 400,000 words. It was mad. So then they did it in a slim back paperback version. And I'm so blessed because that was published now nearly 15 years ago. And last year, because it's still consistently at the top of its, category, I was asked to reissue it with new entries because people are dreaming about social media now. Because when I wrote it, all these, you know, you tend to dream about what's happening in your life. So I was given the wonderful opportunity as an author to reissue it with a new introduction and new entries. So that was a huge blessing. And that's actually triggered a lot of interest in who I am, because I've been around a long time. And that HarperCollins reissue, and they've reissued another of my book coming out this November, actually, which is my astrology manual about the day you were born, the power of that. Has triggered a lot of interest from the media and newspapers and everything, because it's become a much loved book. Sorry, I've gone on a tangent, as I tend to do. People who know me will know that. They stick to the point, Teresa. You see, I can't even remember what your question was, Victor.
The question was, what advice would you, other than getting your book and looking them up, what advice would you offer listeners about decoding their dreams?
Write them down first. First of all, have them. Because a lot of people do say to me, look, this is all very lovely, and I'm very glad you have a very rich dream life, Teresa, but I don't remember my dreams. And I've got to first of all convince them that they do, because research shows everybody dreams. You're just simply not remembering them. And the reason you're not remembering them is because you're not paying attention to them. Like anything in life, if you pay attention to something, it rewards you by, you know, manifesting in your life. So you've got to start thinking more about dreams, you know, reading about them, reflecting on them before you go to sleep. Say, I'm going to have a dream in the morning. Wake up. As soon as you wake up, write down how you feel. If no images come through, write down the feeling that you have, because we all wake up feeling slightly different. Some mornings we feel great, on top of the world. Other mornings it's a bit, nah. You know, write that down, because that feeling has been inspired by a dream. You may not recall it. And then just writing down that feeling will start to trigger memories. And then something will come into your mind. Hey, I dreamt I was playing tennis. Write it down. And then later in the day, don't do it straight away in the morning, because mornings are busy. Think about it. What does tennis mean to you? Who are you playing tennis with? You know, is this something internal or external? And then it starts to yield so much of insight into your waking life, because your dream is commenting on your waking life. People need to understand that. It is a commentary. It's trying to help you work out issues, face fears, role play, different scenarios. It's all trying to help you. Your dreaming mind is your best friend. Even nightmares are for your own good, because they're trying to draw your attention to something you've buried, something you don't want to face, something you need to deal with. And if you have a recurring dream, those dreams will recur until in your waking life you get the message that the dream is trying to send to you.
Absolutely. You had mentioned the dreams of your mother after she passed. You've written several books about the afterlife. What has your research and experience taught you about the hereafter?
Well, I believe I'm in tune with you here, that heaven isn't a place out there or after death. It's alive within you right now. That every moment we are creating our afterlife by what we think and feel and do. That's what I've learned more than anything else. But however, I have worked with people like Dr. Eben Alexander, famous near-death experiencer, Anita Morjani, people like that. And people write to me with their near-death experience stories. I've talked to mediums, looked at scientists researching mediums and afterlife visions, collated this all together. And I can tell you from all that I've done these last 20 years, the amount of research and anecdotal evidence out there is overwhelming. And in any other field of work or research, this would be treated as data. It's witness statements, witness evidence that I don't think we should continue to ignore or dismiss as hallucinations or random, because they're certainly not. Some of these stories are so compelling. In particular, near-death experiences ones, which is where scientific research is kind of focusing now. Dr. Sampania leading that, because he's a resuscitation expert. And, you know, he began to notice that his patients were coming back with these incredible stories that had remarkable similarities. Interestingly, Dr. Sampania does not believe in an afterlife, but he's a scientist. And he's saying these stories, these experiences they're having are so real and transformative. Because in almost all cases, when people have had a near-death experience, they dramatically transform their life for the better. He wanted to study this. And I believe his 2014 study tentatively proved that up to 3 minutes after death, consciousness, spirit, whatever you want to call it, does survive. So what's going on there? It's fascinating. I mean, we don't know what happens after death. We don't know yet. Science doesn't know. But where science is leading at the moment is something happens.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure in about 100 or so years' time, what we regard as science fiction now or fantasy will become proven. I do believe that. I think it's all heading that way.
If you look at some of the things that we have in the world today, 100 years ago, less than that, 80 years ago, it would have been considered to be science fiction. If you had said to somebody in 1920, we're going to go to the moon, we're going to put a man on the moon, they would have said, that's crazy. But look at the way all these wonderful things evolved.
Well, look at this. I'm sitting here in my house. My dog is quiet on my lap. And you're in the U.S. and we're talking.
Absolutely.
If you'd given this, if you told this to someone in medieval times, they would have thought we were gods.
Or witches.
Or witches. But no, God, I'm going to go. But they would have thought that's divine. That's a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What we think, they thought, what we're doing now in times past, people thought was miracles. So I think that will happen with talk of the afterlife and paranormal abilities. We think of them as miracles, and that in time it will be considered as, yeah, of course that happens.
My guest this week is Teresa Chung. We're going to be talking about her new book, The Sensitive Soul. Teresa, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your amazing work.
Oh, just teresachung.com. And if you're on Facebook, I have an author page there. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, though I don't spend as much time on that. It's more Facebook. And I also have my own podcast, White Shores, which you might want to have a enjoy.
Absolutely. And we'll be back with more of Teresa and the Sensitive Soul after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. That's right. They can help save lives by simply washing their hands. Just 20 seconds of thorough hand washing after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside can help fight against the dastardly spread of germs. Armed with only soap and water and hands, your superhero can protect you, your family, and everyone out there in America land. Amazing! Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Right now, we all feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone, the isolation can be overwhelming. Connect with an older loved one and have the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Teresa Chung, and her book is called The Sensitive Soul. Teresa, what does it mean to be a sensitive soul?
It means to live on high alert, really, and it means that when you are out in the world, you notice so much that's going on around you, things that maybe other people aren't aware of. When you're having a conversation, you tune into person's feelings or subtle things that they say and do. You notice what's going on in a room. You kind of feel your way through life rather than, you know, walking your way through life. It's kind of living life is almost a bit like a sponge. And that has great positives, but it can also be have some negatives, and it's learning to manage that, because sensitive souls tend to take on what isn't their own, and they need to learn what's theirs and what isn't theirs, and not to lose themselves. And that's what the book also talks about, is learning to put boundaries around this ability, because people do love sensitive souls. Sensitive souls don't tend to lack for company often, because people feel heard when they're with a sensitive soul in a way that they may not feel in other with their other relationships. But the sensitive soul needs to learn to put a boundary up and not lose themselves. I hope I'm expressing this clearly. I'm sure you understand this, because I sense you're a sensitive soul yourself.
Absolutely. And many of our listeners would be defined here, at least in the States, as empaths or empathic. Is that the same thing?
Empathic. Yes, absolutely. I think it is. I mean, sensitive means more maybe observant. Empathy is more sort of feeling based, but I would class them in the same category. Absolutely. I mean, in fact, empathy and intuition are one of the defining characteristics of someone who is regarded as highly sensitive. Empathy and intuition, they score very, very highly on that.
Now, psychologists identify 1 in 5 people as being highly sensitive, but don't most people have sensitivity to a greater or lesser degree?
Oh, I believe it's in our DNA. I think we all have that. I mean, because communities that took care of their young and were sensitive and caring towards each other tended to survive long. It's necessary for our evolution. But what has happened over time is that people have, you know, grown away from that. But I think deep down in every single one of us, bar a few exceptions, I mean, there is the other end of the scale where we go to narcissism, you know, people who totally lack empathy. And that needs to be studied and researched, what's going on there. But most of us are on a spectrum, and I believe it. We go up and down the empathy and the sensitivity spectrum throughout our lives. And typically life events such as bereavement, loss of a job, personal crisis tends to trigger that sensitivity. So I think even if people aren't typically regarded as sensitive, that when something happens to them that shocks them, like a bereavement, they may find themselves over what feeling emotional and totally sensitive to their environment in a way that never before, because what's happened is it's awakened that potential within them.
Absolutely. Is there a checklist or a test that people may use to determine their degree of sensitivity?
There is one by Dr. Elaine Aron. She famously put people with high sensitivity on the map, her book, The Highly Sensitive Person, which is I really recommend it. It's a great read. There is a test that psychologists use, and you can go onto her website and find out if you're highly sensitive. However, I'm not entirely sure that's helpful, because what I've found, certainly with my life as well, I'm certainly sensitive, but that sometimes I'm more sensitive than others. And you can do that sensitive test, and it's a moment in time. Whereas a year later, life experiences may have changed you. We are constantly evolving. So I find that quite difficult when you ask to categorize yourself as something, because that's just a moment in time of who you are then, a snapshot then, how you're feeling now. You may not feel like that a year down the line, 10 years down the line. So if someone took a test when they were 20, chances are when they're 40, that would be totally different. So it can give you a useful snapshot for where you are now. But also, I'm very against sort of putting people into a category, because it becomes them and us then. I'm much more about finding sensitivity within all of us having that trait, and at some points in our life it's more developed than others.
Absolutely.
But there is, you can do that, and in my book The Sensitive Soul, I kind of create one. I mean, it's not to be medically or scientifically endorsed, of kind of things you can check off which kind of suggest you're edging that way. But if you don't score too highly, that doesn't mean to say you're never going to be sensitive. Of course you are. You're a human being. You know, and human beings just, you know, feel emotional at some point in their life.
Now, we had talked about empathy and intuition being part of the makeup. Are there a few other characteristics or traits that are identified with sensitive people?
Yeah, I mean, compassion, which goes very strongly with empathy. Empathy and compassion are slightly different. Empathy is feeling how someone else feels, understanding them. Compassion is actually doing something about that. If you're a compassionate person, you do kind things, and that leads us on to another trait, kindness, gentleness, observant, intuitive, as you say. These are all very positive qualities associated with being a sensitive person.
Why do you think so many hide or repress their sensitivity?
I guess because they've been hurt, and that when they have been sensitive, maybe it's been rejected or laughed at or ridiculed, or they have applied these values that they have and the way they approach life and it hasn't worked. It's, you know, you found yourself being neglected for an opportunity because you cared about how other people felt. You've been walked all over. And you begin to realize in time that sadly we live in a survival of the fittest world, and people who are more gentle and compassionate soon learn that this isn't going to get them ahead, you know, and if they are emotional, they're going to be called a crybaby. Other people tend to get uncomfortable when you're emotional or you try to understand what's really going on in a situation. So over time, you know, sensitive souls learn to be quiet about that and to hide it. And that's so sad. Because in times past, these people would have been the shamans and the healers in tribes. People would have come to them for advice, for wisdom, for comfort. They had a respected and revered position, I think, within a community. Sadly, now that's not the case. I do suspect that a lot of sensitive souls and empaths gravitate towards the caring, social work, healing professions. I think that it's rich in that, so that their job enables them to be like that on a daily basis, where it's kind of acceptable to be more caring, psychologists, carers, these kind of things. But if you are like that and you know you're working in business or retail or any career, it's tough.
Are sensitives? I'm sorry. Are sensitives more prone to codependency, addiction, and depression?
Tends to be, yes. I don't want to say it's a rule, but it tends to be, yes, because they do really care about the well-being of others, and that is their greatest strength, and it's what the world needs right now. We need to care about the impact of our actions on others. We need to care about how others are feeling, but sadly, what tends to happen is that they put other people's needs and feelings above their own, that pleasing someone else or caring for someone else matters so much more than their own needs. And this sadly can lead to codependency and then being taken advantage of people who don't really care about them, but just see a sucker, for want of a better word, someone that they can use and who, you know, they can just be like a doormat. And that is very, very sad. And you get this codependent dance between a narcissist and an empath that becomes very toxic for both parties. And the cure, the only cure for the empath, is self-love. Because if you truly love yourself, you will recognize when your boundaries have been shattered. You will recognize when someone is treating you badly. And you will think, I respect myself enough to not allow this to happen. What's going on if you're a sensitive person and you're allowing someone to walk all over you? You're allowing someone to abuse you. What is going on there? What does that say about how you regard yourself?
How can we develop that self-love? It's so difficult for so many.
Oh, it is. And it's basic exercises. First of all, imagine that you are your best friend. You know, if your best friend was saying, look, I'm with someone who keeps calling me a loser, steals my money, takes advantage, what would you say to that best friend? You'd say, get out of there. You know, start being a best friend to yourself. Start stepping outside yourself. Become an observer of your own life. And this is where meditation techniques can help, because they encourage you to not identify with your thoughts and feelings, but to step outside and observe yourself in a kind of an objective way. But it is a lifelong journey. And I think, to return to what you asked me earlier, which I didn't pick up on this early enough, one of the fundamental spiritual lessons of our life is to learn self-love, is to learn that all we need is within us and that we are enough We are enough. If sensitive souls could just wake up every morning and say, I am enough. I am enough. Constantly say that and start believing it. They would feel a lot happier.
In my teaching of healers in certain healing classes, one of the things that I would do prior to the attunement to the healing energy and Reiki specifically is have them take a little bit of an oath with their eyes closed and say, to my higher self, I promise that from this day forward, I will give myself the same kindness and loving attention that I've so often given others and know that I am worthy to receive it.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. Absolutely where my thinking is. Again, I think I talk about parenting yourself because we all have that child within us who maybe was neglected or abandoned or ridiculed. To imagine that we're now going to parent our own inner child in the same thing and you know, treat that child with love and compassion and understanding, to basically parent ourselves, to reconnect with that vulnerable, hurt person inside us who is lacking self-esteem. But I think that's what we're here to learn. And life keeps, you think you get there and then life will throw another challenge at you. You know, I sometimes think, well, I'm here now. I really love myself. I'm really getting it. And then something will happen, like an interview that I was excited about is pulled, or something will go wrong with an editing process. And suddenly I'm doubting again and the self-esteem issues come in. And it's a constant journey of going back and saying, it's okay. None of this matters. It's external. You are enough. You know, constantly reassuring ourselves. I think parenting ourselves is the journey of our lives.
And then the other challenge is the amount of narcissism that's expressed itself in the world. Isn't it taking center stage right now?
Yeah, we have flipped totally that way. It seems almost, I think, you know, social media, I'm not against social media, actually. I think it's brilliant the way it connects the world and enables people to communicate in ways that they couldn't. So, you know, and it's a way for like-minded people to connect. But when you basically, everybody now is a star of their own newsfeed, doing selfies and presenting themselves in the best possible life. And I've been caught up in that world as well. You know, when you do high profile things, suddenly it's all about how you look, and you have to check yourself that you start thinking that it's all about you. And I can only imagine now, because children have grown up with their phones, they have the world in their hands, where they can present themselves to the world, you know, in the way that, you know, is me, me, me. It is scary, but it has, narcissism basically represents for me life that is lived externally, a life that bases happiness and success on what the world says about you, what other people think about you, how much money you have, what your status is, how many likes you have, how many followers you have. A narcissist is someone who has completely been seduced by that, and in the process sold their soul.
And have no compassion.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's all about my thoughts, and you have to look back. You know, a book that I actually did admire when I first encountered it was The Power of Positive Thinking, which is about you can control everything in your world through your thoughts. We have to actually look honestly at the New Age movement, the messages that come out from books like The Secret, which is basically you have the ultimate power. You make things happen with your thoughts. You know, this, you know, powering through with that narcissistic approach. It's all about you, you, you. You are the center of the world. And this is totally different from the self-love we talked about before, which is a nurturing, caring one, and respecting yourself.
And extending the same to others, yeah.
A narcissist doesn't respect themselves, because the only way they can feel good about themselves is if everybody else loses. You know, a sensitive soul who loves themselves feels good when everybody wins. Whereas a narcissist, it's very much, I win, you lose. Absolutely. There's no in-between. It is scary. I do think that social media plays a big part in it. And the way that young people now, you know, the way, if you look at their Instagram, their news feeds, and how they're presenting themselves. And it's constant selfie after selfie after selfie, or I did this, it's me, 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 all the time. But I, I do also think that, like anything in life, there will be a tip the other way. And I am starting to see it, actually. It's been really exciting that young people are starting to care about the planet, to care about other people. And, of course, during the pandemic, we've seen an extraordinary amount of compassion from the care workers, the health workers. And we are applauding them now, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Rather than the celebrities and the Instagram models and the reality TV stars.
Yes.
And goodness, isn't that long overdue? We now are more in, we want to hear about these heroes.
Absolutely.
You know, people are putting their lives on the line for us every day.
Absolutely.
Whereas, you know, a few years ago, nobody cared. You know, it was all about, you know, getting famous and getting a reality TV show. That's all that was the height of success. But as I said, even then, I mean, I was doing it already even then, if that really was the answer to life's, you know, how to be happy, why are so many of these people who have this, who have the likes, have the follows, have the looks, have the fame, have the money, why are they so unhappy, a lot of them? And they are. You read, you know, high profile cases of celebrities deeply unhappy, you know, making a mess of things. You know, if that was the answer, and yet we're chasing that, aren't we?
My guest is Teresa Chung. She's the author of The Sensitive Soul. We'll be back with more of Teresa after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school can feel like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. FindSomethingNew.org offers resources that help develop new skills, skills that can position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Find your path to a new career at FindSomethingNew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Teresa Chung. She's the author of The Sensitive Soul. How is it that sensitives can avoid being marginalized in a world where so many narcissists are preeminent right now?
Oh, big question. To avoid being marginalized, you've got to just believe in yourself, take care of yourself, and not compromise your values, and just realize that sensitive is the new strong. It is. because it's the only way that the world is going to heal and move forward. Know that, because there's no other way, absolutely no other way. Compassion, kindness, empathy, being intuitive, being sensitive is the only way to help the world heal now. Know that. That is a fact. You know, there's a lot of talk about facts and what isn't a fact. That is a fact. That is the only way that humanity has moved forward. So just know that. That's, you know, to answer that question.
Absolutely. Someone once said to me that they would never mistake my kindness for weakness. How may kindness and gentleness become those strengths?
They become strengths because at the end of the day, people value, do really respect someone who has been gentle and kind. Initially, they may be, you know, regarded as, you know, as people that can be easily pushed about. But at the end of the day, it is those people that we return to. I mean, take a look at your own life. You know, you will know people that who have been true to their values, who have been filled with integrity, who have been honest, who have been kind. These people are diamonds. They truly are. And it's just remembering that, that, you know, to just play the long game here. Don't think short term. That's what I advise.
Absolutely. I know many sensitive and empathic people who've become overwhelmed by the troubled energy of others and of the world. What protective techniques would you offer them?
I do offer, I mean, if you can't remove yourself and spend some time alone, because sensitive souls need time alone as much as they need air. You need regular time out. There's nothing wrong. Actually, the ability to be happy alone is one of life's joys. And that's one of the greatest strengths also, I should have mentioned in my previous answer about being a sensitive person, is that they are content in their own company. And people who aren't content in their own company often get quite alarmed by people that are. It kind of frightens them. But, you know, spend time alone to regroup, to regather, to build up your resources. Spend time in nature. Nature is so healing and enriching. And also, but if you are in a group situation, of course, that wouldn't happen so much now in the pandemic. And if you're in lockdown, it's interesting, actually, that sensitive souls have coped better with lockdown than most, because their lives tend to be quite quiet and, you know, not too social. But if you are in a group of people, imagine a protective bubble of light around you that nobody can penetrate. That's one technique. A bubble of protective light, meditation, time out, time in nature, time walking beside water as well. I've noticed a lot of empath, sensitive souls, they love water. And water, of course, is a symbol of emotion. And, you know, it may be where we came from. Just spend time close to lakes, seas, oceans, rivers. Very calming, very healing, very strengthening.
I know one of my prior guests had talked about the fact that we need to connect to the earth, take our shoes off where possible, and connect to the soil or water if it's warm enough. Obviously, we don't want to go out in the cold. But if there's a warm way we can do that, that's a wonderful thing to do also.
Well, yeah, earth, it's called earthing, isn't it, the scientific term? And there's actually been a few studies on that it does help in decrease anxiety. So right now, I think we're all feeling pretty anxious the way the world is at the moment. It might be highly recommended, but be safe, though. Make sure there's no stones or sharp objects.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've personally done is I've sort of disconnected from negative media.
Hard though, isn't it? Because I mean, you're a busy person, you know, the way you with your books and your radio show, that you obviously you'd be online a lot, and it just keeps at you, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Even though you try and avoid it, it's just impossible to escape the dialogue that's happening on the media. But I do try as well. I do try and block. But I do want to hear other opinions. The hard thing is, if you know what's negative and what's something you disagree with, I suppose it's knowing the difference, isn't it?
Are sensitive souls more likely to be highly intuitive and psychic than others?
Yes, absolutely. Because if you're an empathetic person, that's the beginning of psychic ability. A psychic, a medium, a healer, they're very empathetic because they've got to tune into you. And you can't tune into someone if you're not empathetic, if you can't imagine what it's like to walk in their shoes. So you have a great starting point if you do believe you're a sensitive soul, which I think is everybody listening to your radio show, because they wouldn't be tuning into it if they weren't. That is the best starting point, your empathy. And from there, from imagining what it's like to be in someone else's shoes, you can start to develop your psychic abilities, which I believe we all have to certain degrees. It just takes time and patience to develop it.
Absolutely.
And I think actually if sensitive souls don't develop psychically, that can lead to depression, because sensitive souls need to have meaning in their life. They need to feel that there's more to this life than the stuff, the material. And that's why they feel like an outsider, and have done often from childhood, because other people seem to have been like getting on with the parties and looking at the career, the relationships, and they do that too, and they know that has value, but it's not enough. It's sure. not enough. There has to be a deeper meaning. There has to be an underlying deeper meaning, a why to why they're doing things.
Should sensitive souls spend more time expressing themselves creatively?
Yeah, creativity goes with the territory too, because you can't be an artist without being empathetic. You know, the great works of art and literature, if you look at great novels, you know, writers have to imagine a character, create a world. Of course, creativity is a part of being sensitive, because it's that empathy again. And when you are doing a great work of art, you know, you're depicting a scene, you've got to pour life and spirit into it. Creativity, yes, another way for sensitive souls to find their meaning.
And for me personally, listening to music is really important.
Oh, music as well, yeah. There's a lot of scientific research actually about listening to music and how it does use your whole brain, both the left and the right side. It helps them work together, because your, you know, the logical side of your brain is trying to work out the pattern of the notes, to find a pattern, because that's what we do when we listen to music. We try and seek a pattern. But then the intuitive side is thinking of infinite possibilities and what the note suggests and the meaning. And both those sides of the brain are activated. That's why music has such great power, especially over sensitive souls. And there have been studies of the brains of sensitive people listening to music, and their brains react. They just ignite. So, you know, if you're the kind of person listening and when you listen to music, it sends shivers down your spine, chances are you're a highly sensitive soul.
Absolutely. Why is spiritual growth absolutely essential for sensitive souls?
If they don't, they're going to continue to feel like outsiders. They're going to continue to feel like, you know, they're not quite part of this world. They're going to continue to feel like their life really hasn't got any meaning and purpose. It's only through that spiritual path that the pieces of the puzzle will start to fit together. And they will actually see how important they are, what important human beings they are with their sensitive traits, and how their compassion, their empathy, their creativity, their intuition are what unites and heals the world. Imagine a world without those qualities. Oh my goodness.
I can't.
Wouldn't want to be there.
You had talked about your work with dream interpretation, the many books that you've written. Why is dream interpretation so important for sensitives?
Because it's the entry point. Where do you go in your dreams? What is this place? What is it? I mean, scientists don't know why we dream. There are lots of theories. Some say it's always just the brain firing off random images. But, you know, these dreams sometimes have such compelling storylines and scenarios. You have dreams that can even predict things that happen. What is going on in your dreams? That's the entry point for spiritual development. That's why I focus so much on dreaming, because dreams illustrate our shared humanity. We all dream, regardless of what we believe, where we were born, who we are, what age we are, what stage in life. We all dream. They illustrate our shared humanity. They're also the entry point to the invisible and unseen aspect of our lives, that for me are the portal to infinite possibility. That part of us which exists separate from our mind and our body, that part of us, you can call it consciousness or spirit, Nobody quite knows what happens when we dream. We don't know why we dream. And I that eternal mystery is what fascinates me.
Absolutely. What would you like readers to take away from The Sensitive Soul?
Just sensitive is the new strong, I think. That it's not, it's something that's been neglected and pushed away, especially in the last decade. But let's now the scales tilt the other way. Let sensitivity start trending. Let kindness start trending. Let compassion start trending. Make being sensitive the new strong.
Absolutely. And my personal sense is that those of us who are sensitive, those of us who are empathic, those of us who are healers, those of us who express compassion and love to others are going to be so necessary in the world to come.
Absolutely. Just imagine a world without it. Imagine a world. We don't want that. Imagine there's no heaven. You know, John Lennon, he was a sensitive, wasn't he? But, you know, just imagine that. Just imagine what life if you woke up and all of that was gone. Your qualities are needed so much right now for the world to heal, connect, and to evolve.
Absolutely. My guest is Teresa Chung. She's the author of The Sensitive Soul. Teresa, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'd like to thank you for your time and for inviting me and for your wonderful work, Victor. Thank you so much. You're amazing. It's teresachung.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I also have a rather eccentric podcast called White Shores.
Wonderful podcast. I've listened to several of them. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.